Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are dissecting the truthfulness of common money phrases.
Joel, we are talking about these money phrases. These are like the maxims or the proverbs that you've heard
your whole life.
basically your entire life. You know, sometimes they might be equated to like little sayings that you get like on a fortune cookie. That's part of the reason why we're talking about this today. We want to make sure that you are not getting your financial advice from a fortune cookie.
Don't do that.
Yeah, that's bad news. Yeah. So before we get to that, though, I wanted to share with you, Evie had been wanting an Etch-A-Sketch.
Your oldest, your seven-year-old.
That's right. Yeah. So she's been working, doing jobs around the house, saving up her money, and she's really been wanting an Etch-A-Sketch, which is pretty cool. It's like an old school toy. I had one of those when I was a kid, you know. Did your best to try to draw a circle. It's impossible.
It is.
And so the time came to where she was like, all right, I definitely want to do this. And, you know, we didn't see any like used, you know, like yard sales or anything like that. So we hopped online, we shopped around, looked for the best price. Not surprisingly, it was on Amazon. And as we were getting ready to make the purchase, we saw down below it had like new or used item or whatever. It was an open box. And so we clicked it and I was like, Evie, check it out. And it was $3 or $4 less to get the quote unquote used one. It was an open box, and it said on there that it might have a scuff like on the back of the thing. You know, like it would not affect the ability to draw jaggedy circles or anything like that. And so we asked Evie, like, hey, do you want to save $3 or $4 by getting this version that's not perfectly brand new? Like somebody else has already opened the box, but it works perfectly fine. And without even blinking an eye, she was like, oh, yeah. We were so happy that she instinctively was just like, oh, that's a great way to save money. I'm just proud, I guess, of the fact that we're imbuing our kids with our frugal ways. But it reminded me that there are just so many lessons that we can teach our kids. So all the folks out there who have kids, there are just ways that we can, you know, teach our kids how to be frugal, teach them, you know, how to work hard, how to save their money, make smart moves with their money. There are lots of little lessons that I guess if we keep an open mind to those and look out for them, they're there.
Yeah, we can infuse them into the everyday, into just like little decisions like that. Sometimes at the grocery store, you know, learning a lesson about money, like we can talk about that there. You know, my sister just recently went out of town, went down to Florida, and Selma has been taking care of her cat. She made a little extra money that way.
Nice.
Like Aunt Sal Sal's paying her a few bucks.
The same Aunt Sal Sal that donated some beers to us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's just like a perfect time also to learn a money lesson. Like, hey, you know, when we work, when we do things for other people, like sometimes we make money. And so not always, sometimes we do nice things for family members without expecting anything in return. But that was just a perfect opportunity for her to see, oh, there's other ways out there for me to make money.
Yeah.
Starts to expand her mind.
Yeah, it allows them to be a little more creative in how they approach their money, right?
Yeah.
Like always side hustling, maybe always trying to think of other entrepreneurial endeavors. Like maybe she's going to start her own like pet sitting business, and all the pets are going to be in your house. So do y'all have the cat over at your house right now?
No.
Oh, okay.
So she lives in the neighborhood. We can
y'all go over there,
ride our bikes over there.
Okay.
You know, feed the cat.
Nice.
Play with it for a minute,
okay.
And then although the cat's not super playful, kind of hiding under the bed.
Isn't that always the case? I feel like there's never two really good cats. There's always like one really friendly one and one that like totally sucks.
Right.
That just always scratches people up.
Like the loner.
Yeah. I don't know if that's always the case, but
good lesson though to have to take care of an animal because you know we don't have one of our own in our house. But it's also good, like you know, if we do eventually get an animal,
which y'all have talked about,
we will have some practice.
Yeah, so, I love it.
We'll see if we make it there. But all right, yeah, Matt, let's mention the beer we're having on the show today. This one is called Aliens on Moonshine, and it's by Torchtop Brewing. They're a local Atlanta brewery. I love the name. Just makes me think of a bunch of aliens passed out in the corner having had a lot of moonshine. But
oh, funny. I was thinking of like in space.
Oh, okay. I was thinking moonshine the drink.
I guess it could be that as well, but yours evokes a funnier image.
It does.
I pictured like a UFO kind of like, I don't know, like riding down a beam of moonlight, like moonshine.
That's sweeter.
I guess it would have been moonlight.
A bunch of drunk
maybe.
Aliens.
Yeah. Either way, this is the beer we're enjoying that we're sharing here from Torchtop. Looking forward to sharing this one with you, man, and also sharing our thoughts on it at the end of the episode.
That's right. But for now, let's get onto the topic at hand. We're dissecting the truthfulness of common money phrases. And Matt, I feel like the most common money phrases we hear, besides the ones that we get in fortune cookies sometimes, the ones that we hear over and over, repeated, you know, on the TV or from parents or from loved ones, They get ingrained as truth over time in our minds. And if you hear something consistently enough, it starts to take root in your psyche. I feel like that's kind of part of the goal that advertisers have, is to make you feel something or react a certain way when you see an item in the store based on like what you've seen on TV when you've seen those ads play, to get you to associate positive feelings with a brand so that you maybe grab a Coke when you're feeling thirsty, even though Coke doesn't actually quench your thirst, right? But the way people...
It's wet. Scarf technically, it down, yeah.
Yeah. The commercials, you're like, oh, man, he just like went for a run. He had a Coke, man. Well, yeah, that might work. But it doesn't really, right?
Yeah, I think he's about to have a massive burp. You know, like, I don't even like drinking seltzer out of a can. Like, I always pour it in a glass and allow some of the air to escape.
Smart move. Yeah. But today we want to talk about some of the most common money phrases that we hear, and we want to dissect the truthfulness of those phrases. If something we're told about money is incorrect or flawed or incomplete, like, we need to know that. So let's not just let the most common things we hear about something as important as money become normalized without at least a little bit more critically about the truthfulness or lack thereof of some of these phrases.
Man, you know, this totally makes me think of the different myths that we heard as kids growing up, you know, like, for instance, something of like, if you swallow your gum, it's going to take 7 years to digest. I remember that one. I definitely knew that one was false.
What about
after I fell asleep one time and had a piece of gum like dissolve in my mouth, and I was like, okay, there's no way that if it dissolved in my mouth that it's actually going to take 7 years to digest.
Those are lies.
Seriously, yeah.
Well, what about you have to wait for an hour to swim after eating?
Yep.
I think that one's kind of made up too, right?
Like, I think a lot of these are just as parents, ways that they can control their kids, like, out of fear. Oh, like another one I remember too is like don't swallow or don't eat watermelon seeds, otherwise you'll have like watermelons growing in your stomach. All the ones I remember are things that involve putting things in my mouth. So I think that might speak to what it was like for me growing up, right?
Little Freudian there.
Yeah. And so obviously these are myths that kind of get passed down either from parents to kids or, you know, from one generation of kids to another. But they stick with us, right? And so, you know, we're spending an entire episode talking through some of these different money phrases because we want to make sure that we're not accidentally basing our personal finance beliefs just on a bunch of half-truths.
All right, so let's get into it. Let's mention the first money phrase we want to dissect, and it's throwing good money after bad. We've all heard that one before,
yes,
right? And of course, this phrase speaks to spending money on something problematic in hopes that you can fix the issue by tossing more of your money in that direction. And I think this phrase, Matt, rings very true in many parts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I agree.
There's a fancy behavioral economics concept for why we throw good money after bad money, and it's called the sunk cost fallacy, which basically occurs when you continue a behavior because you've already invested resources like time, effort, or money into it. We have a tendency to not know when we should cut our losses and move on. And we think that if we put more money into a problem that we can fix it. But that's not always the case. And so instead of making a choice on the desire not to see your past investment go to waste, make it on the outcome you'd most like to see moving forward instead. That way we're less likely to throw good money after bad if we change how we think about the problem that we're encountering.
That's right. It makes me think of like an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's like you spent the $10 or whatever it costs these days, and no matter what, you're definitely going to get your money's worth. So you keep eating, even though each additional plate of food you get just makes you feel worse. But you could also potentially use this phrase to buy something new without giving thought to how you can fix or repurpose that item. So this is a way that this could be a negative thing, right? So for instance, buying a new battery for a watch. Like, that's not throwing good money after bad. Like, you're spending $5 to keep that $30 watch running. Or, you know, maybe even fixing the AC on your car that's just 5 years old. Again, that's not throwing away good money after bad. If it's been a great car and you can spend, you know, maybe $500 to fix it, you do that and you keep on driving. So throwing good money after bad is a good concept. It's true. But you do need to know when it makes sense to actually use that phrase.
Yeah, you don't want to use it as an excuse. Like, yes, well, I don't want to throw good money after bad on this perfectly good item that all you need to do is spend a little time, a little effort, and a small amount of money to fix.
That does not compute.
Right, yeah. But again, it goes back to that not making the choice based on the money you've already invested, but what's the outcome you'd most like to see moving forward? That's
exactly
a better way to think about it. The AC in your car, you're like, well, it's easy to think if I sell it and get something new and I don't have any problems, but eventually that car is going to give you problems too. In that case, you do want to spend some money, and it's not throwing good money after bad. It's just fixing something that needs fixing.
That's right, man. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next money phrase, which is that money is the root of all evil. And so this is one you have certainly heard all of your life, and depending, you know, on how religious you are, you may have heard it way too much. But this phrase actually comes from the New Testament in the Bible, and it often gets misconstrued. And the quote is actually that the love of money is the root of all evil. And so this clears things up because, you know, money certainly isn't the root of all evil, but it's easy to see how the love of money produces serious issues in our world and in our own lives, in our own hearts even. And that's why we try to talk about how to use money as a tool while simultaneously trying to kind of avoid the pinky in the brain mentality. You know, Joel, you've mentioned that before, where you just want to amass more and just conquer, right?
Take over the world. That's my goal every night.
And so when money gets out of place in our lives and becomes something that we love and cling to instead of just using it as a helpful tool, it will have harmful effects in our lives.
Yeah, it's so important to view money as simply a tool that you can wield, like you just said, Matt, because if folks are going around thinking that money is inherently evil, then of course that will have a negative effect on your perception of money. You're less likely to be an investor, to become an investor and start growing your money. You're less likely to think that advancing in your career and making more money is a good thing, because if money in and of itself is the root of all evil, then you definitely don't want to get more of it.
You probably want to avoid it at all costs. It probably means too that you're not talking about it, right? Like, yeah, if you feel that this is something bad, well, it kind of increases that taboo. It increases that behavior of avoidance, even talking about the topic.
Yeah, the shame that you associate it with it in general. And then obviously, if you feel that way, it's going to compound your money issues, which affect so many other parts of your life. It also might hurt how you perceive those who have a lot of money, right?
Other people who are doing wise things with their money. Right,
right. Who are doing well, and you might demonize them. If money is bad, then you must be bad if you have money.
Right.
And so when you hear this said, try to remember the actual phrase. And at the very least, regardless of your religious beliefs, that loving money is a detriment to our ability to live a good life. So when we dissect this phrase, Matt, I think we kind of come somewhere in the middle, right? Like, money isn't the root of all evil. The love of money certainly is a root of much evil in our society.
Yes.
And but going too far down the path of thinking that, you know, associating money with being a bad thing has a lot of negative connotations in our lives and how we view others too.
Yeah, this one mostly seems untrue just based on the fact that it's just misquoted.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think we want to encourage folks to make sure that they get the saying correct. And so, Joel, we've got a lot more of these phrases to get to, including penny wise, pound foolish. That one came from the UK.
Oh.
You know, because they said pound, right? We'll get to that one as well as several others right after the break.
All right, we're back. And Matt, before we get to some of those European sayings, let's stay stateside and go with one of our founding fathers, a popular saying that's attributed commonly to Benjamin Franklin. A penny saved is a penny earned. This is the next common money phrase we want to dissect. And Benjamin Franklin obviously wrote a lot about money. He was fascinated by it. He wrote a lot of great maxims. And I feel like a lot of those, because he was such a good writer, have really stuck in American parlance. And a lot of the common money sayings actually we could attribute back to him.
That's right. But, you know, how accurate is this common money phrase, you know, that we've heard our whole lives? Well, we feel that it's pretty accurate. You know, this quote is really all about living frugally, which obviously we are all about. The money that we earn that we don't spend, it creates meaningful margin in our lives. And Joel and I are advocates of abolishing the penny. So we might want to update this one to this phrase to a dollar saved is a dollar earned.
That'd be better.
Or a Bitcoin saved is a Bitcoin earned.
Nobody's got the money for that.
No. But it is important, though, to know that pennies and dollars, they add up more quickly than we think. It makes me think about, you know, I was talking about Evie, like, doing kind of jobs around the house. I don't know if you remember, but we've shared on the show before how when we do trash treasures, I used to pay 5 cents per piece of glass or metal.
But and I heard inflation has
caused
that rate to go up.
And just 1 cent for every piece of plastic. But I found, whether it be because of inflation or because of the girls are less interested or because there's just fewer bits of trash in our yard, like, they've actually done a really good job of finding all these things, but I've had to increase the rate. And so now, instead of a nickel and a penny, now I'm paying a dime for every piece of glass and metal and a nickel for every piece of plastic. Pennies in our house, man, are pretty worthless, except for maybe to teach just the youngest when it comes to you know, how to count and what goes into a nickel. But yeah, so I stand behind the abolishing of the penny.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I agree. But that phrase, penny saved is a penny earned is still, I think, helpful. And it is a useful money phrase. And I like that we still use it, even though it was essentially invented in the late 1700s.
Yeah.
But while these are wise words, it's also important to point out that frugality alone won't get you to where you want to be financially. And I think sometimes overly frugal people, they love phrases like this. They cling to it because they don't want to see the other side of the money coin, where they can make positive improvements to their lives to make more. And so we want to stress that it's also important to utilize your human capital, increase your earning potential, and to invest for the future. Like, frugality should be praised. Matt and I, we're big fans. We do a lot of frugal stuff.
We do lots of frugal things.
We do. But at the same time, we shouldn't take that path to the exclusion of making other wise financial choices.
That's right. Yeah, you can't frugal your way to becoming a millionaire, right? And so another common money phrase that we're going to cover here is money changes people. And, you know, the truth is that money does often change people. You know, I'm thinking of Charles Dickens, his classic A Christmas Carol. It's a perfect example of a person who gets consumed by wealth accumulation. And so he ends up treating others poorly, loses all the things that really matter to him in his life. Money changed Ebenezer Scrooge.
Still one of my favorite stories, by the way.
It's a classic, man. And, you know, no doubt many of us can point to maybe just someone in our own lives, someone who we know who has maybe come into some money and then ended up finding new friends. You know, maybe they stopped returning your phone calls or your texts.
New number, who dis? I don't know you anymore.
Who it is? Got lots of money now. It's unfortunate, but it's kind of true, you know. And some research also has shown that as wealth levels grow, that people become more narcissistic. But on the other hand, less wealthy folks tend to be more empathetic, compassionate, and also give more of their money.
Yeah, it is fascinating how that happens, how if you live your life essentially in this place of just growth and accumulation, and you turn inward, your focus becomes on yourself, and you do begin to change. I think, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge is the perfect example, right, of in classic literature. But it's interesting how people with less money often take care of the people around them better than rich people do. Hmm. But on the other hand, does money actually change that person, or does it just amplify who they already are at their core, right?
It might come. Good question.
Yeah, I feel like it's not always the money that changes the person. Sometimes money allows you to be more of those leanings, those tendencies that you already had. And it might come down to the individual. And money changing people doesn't have to be true, right? Some of the richest folks in the world are giving massive amounts of wealth and time to worthy people and projects, like Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, Mackenzie Scott are a few examples. Matt, we talked about how much money she gave away, like $1 billion a month for months in a row. And that's a perfect example of how having tons of money doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a jerk, right? And so we think that the perfect antidote to staying the same when you do have more money is giving large portions of your money away and maintaining relationships with lifelong friends. You don't want to cut them off because you got new, richer friends, right?
That's part of why craft beer is such an equalizer. It's like it's something that pretty much everybody can enjoy, you know? Like, we're not necessarily getting into fine wines and, you know, aged cognacs and stuff. Although, that kind of sounds nice, but that's not our style.
Exactly. And like, I think sometimes this saying is true, right? Money does change people. We've seen it happen. But also, too, we'd modify it to say that money might possibly change people.
Sure.
It's not a 100% true thing, but it is hard. And as you make more money, as you get closer to financial independence, it's worth thinking about and guarding yourself against.
Very true. That's right, man. Let's move on. Let's keep moving. Our next phrase is money can't buy happiness. And I think we're going to go ahead and give this one like a 9 out of 10 on the truth scale.
The truthiness scale.
A little Colbert nod there. And, you know, that's because money and happiness are not synonymous. You know, we just talked about how money changes people, how it can change people. Often the folks with the most money are leading miserable lives. And in fact, there's research out there that shows that individuals who are making over $105,000 a year, they tended to be associated with reduced life satisfaction as well as a lower level of well-being. Part of this is that really rich people tend to live more isolated lives, and, you know, they're asking themselves, like, am I doing better than other folks? Like, that becomes the question that those folks ask themselves. And so, you know, money and possessions become the easiest measuring stick, leading to a lack of happiness in the areas that truly do matter. They're looking at the wrong things.
Yeah, but then again, too, right, Matt, there's 10% of the world that's living in poverty, and many other people who aren't too far above the poverty line, and more money would have a direct correlation to increased happiness for a lot of those folks, right? Basically, up until you hit that $75,000 a year income threshold, people are happier the more money they make. And so, yeah, people living on less than that are having a harder time.
Yeah, it really is interesting how when you have individuals who are earning around what the median income is in America, that for the most part, folks are pretty happy, you know? And so it's just weird because like one way or the other, it does kind of go back to like looking around you a little bit. Because if you don't know that like, oh, this is a possibility for me. And if, you know, you're kind of hanging out with your neighbors, your friends, you're all earning, you know, similar amounts. Well, you're not necessarily looking to your money or your income in order to gain that happiness. You're hopefully looking at the things that truly do matter.
Yeah. So can money buy happiness? Well, we would say that making enough to get by and to not have to stress about money is really important, really helpful, and will contribute to, I think, a greater level of happiness and satisfaction. But having a ton of excess really isn't crucial to being able to enjoy the things that matter in life. So yeah, again, I think, yeah, 8 or 9 out of 10 on the truthiness scale that money can't buy happiness. It really can't, right? And I think sometimes people think, if I have more money, my life is going to be better off. I'm going to be in a better place. And especially if you're in a great financial position already, you might be overly fixated on money as a solution to what ails you. And really what you need to look to is other things that actually provide meaning and satisfaction in life and not the accrual of more money.
That's right. Yeah, this actually kind of makes me think of the phrase, and this is one that we included, but the phrase that's been attributed to Malcolm Forbes of the Forbes publication, right? The website, which is, he who dies with the most toys wins, which is obviously we don't believe in at all. Like, we didn't include that because it's clearly not true, very easily debunked. But this is kind of, you know, reinforcing that, like, yeah, there's a certain small level of wellness that you can make sure that you have in your life that can lead to health, which in turn leads to happiness. But for everybody else out there, you know, looking to increase your income isn't a way to achieve more happiness. The next phrase that we wanted to share with folks is that cash is king. That's another phrase, you know, we've all heard, and it's often used in the investing arena to note that having some liquidity is important when making a purchase so that you can pounce when the time is right. And so, you know, there is real truth to that in the investing and in the personal finance space, right? Like, having cash in the bank not only reduces stress, but it allows you the freedom. It gives you the ability to make moves that those with lesser cash reserves couldn't make. You know, the beginnings of a cash reserve, you know, that's what we call an emergency fund. Like, that's when you see your stress levels go down because you have more margin in your life. But then after that, you can begin to take advantage of opportunities that come your way. You know, you can build up some peace out money that allows you to maybe ditch a crappy job. You can use that money to take a sabbatical, or you can even use that money to start your own business.
Yeah, Matt, it reminds me of last week's episode where we talked about the role of preparedness and how that transforms opportunities that might come along into what seems like lucky breaks that you're then able to take action on. And having enough cash on hand kind of offers you a little bit of that, like the ability to pounce on certain opportunities. It's hard to, you know, buy a real estate investment property deal if you don't have any cash in the bank to do so, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But on the flip side of the coin, too much cash can be the move of a fearful investor. Cash is great, and I think we learned that even more so, right, in these COVID times. But if an overemphasis on cash stops you from investing in your 401k, your IRA, or, you know, other tax-advantaged retirement accounts, you don't understand the downsides of having too much cash on hand. And that's because inflation eats away the value of your money if you aren't intentional about growing it. Getting too conservative with your money can be a real struggle for a lot of folks.
Yeah, so this is one I feel like that we would say is true 50% of the time. You know, like 50% of the time, it's true 100% of the time. It just depends on what situation you're in. And it's not just investments too. Like, it makes me think of having cash on hand in order to even make a purchase, not of an investment, but something that you need to purchase. You know, like, if you have the money on hand, like, you're able to take advantage of the deals that are out there. You know, like you, Joel, like, you're so good at like keeping an eye on the deals. But guess what? You can know where the deals are, but if you don't have the money to make the purchase, well, you're kind of missing out.
You're going into debt in order to buy that thing, and cash would be definitely king in that situation.
Absolutely.
Another thing too, real quick on the cash is king, Matt, is that I think sometimes when we're talking about how we spend, the method that we use when we're buying something, cash isn't king there, because, you know, we talk about why credit cards are a better choice for most people if you can handle credit cards well as a purchasing option. Credit cards are king when it comes to how you buy things.
Yeah. When it comes to consumer protection and cash back.
Yeah, the rewards and the consumer protections in tandem, and cash doesn't get you that thing. Like, you won't get like an extended warranty on something that you buy if you pay for it in cash, but you in all likelihood will if you use the right credit card.
Most stuff.
That's just another situation, another way in which cash isn't necessarily king, but... yeah, cash is also important.
All right, so it's true like 40% of the time.
40% of the time, exactly. All right, let's move on to the next money phrase. This one comes from across the pond, as Matt made mention earlier. We're going to cover penny wise and pound foolish. And Matt, I feel like that's actually something I've maybe been called before quite a while back. Mm. That used to be more of a struggle for me. I'd pinch pennies on the little stuff and I'd go maybe a little too big on the things that I should have been more careful. I should have put more thought into spending money on. I feel like for some folks with certain personality types, mine included, being penny wise and pound foolish can be a struggle.
Yeah, it makes me think of folks who, you know, might be really careful when it comes to like small matters in their life, right? Like, so like keeping their AC set at 78 in the summer, like they're always a little sweaty, but they're not spending the real money in, you know, into insulating your attic well, which would provide, like, yes, it costs more like upfront, but it's going to provide you, you know, much more savings, much less energy usage down the road. You know, you might be intentional about saving on your groceries so that you can, you know, maybe finally open an IRA and start investing, but then you don't pay attention to the fees. And that's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars over your investing lifetime. I know for me personally, like one of the ways that I think I, you know, might be called cheap or you know, penny wise and pound foolish is like, I don't like to spend the time or the money to go see the doctor or go to the dentist. I'm relatively a pretty healthy guy. And to me, like, I just have a tough time with that. I'm like, does it make sense? And I know I need to go in and get checked up. And so, like, because of that, at the beginning of the year, we made a line item on the budget where it's like, Matt's going to go to the doctor. Like, we have it itemized on our, like, on our savings buckets, because I know that I need to go. But in the moment, I'm, you know, I think, oh, like, I don't need to do that. And so I'm afraid that I'm being pound foolish in that case, right? Because if I avoid paying small amounts to go get my teeth checked out or go see the doctor, like, there might end up being a larger problem, larger health problem down the road. And not only would that cost me my health potentially, but it could end up being a much bigger bill as well.
That's true. I will say, I recommend you go to the doctor and to the dentist.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not going to hound you about it though. I think it's also too, it's important to pay attention to both the small and the big financial decisions in our lives. Getting the small things right is great, but getting the big things right is often more important. We've talked about that, Matt. If we get those bigger line items in our budget super right, then the small things are just of a little bit less consequence. But if we're super fine-tuned to the smallest areas of our budget and less perceptive about what's going on in those bigger areas where, you know, we might let money fly, we'll likely find ourselves in like a crappy financial situation. And so I'm not sure, you know, how many people have this issue where they do fixate on the small expenses and kind of let the big ones go sometimes. But yeah, I know that I can identify with that. That's been the case for me before in my life, and it's still kind of a struggle at times. So if you're one of those people, I just want to say I identify with you, okay? And all right, we've got a few more common money phrases that we want to dissect the validity of, and we'll get to those right after this break.
We are back, and man, let's keep on going with the money phrases. This next one is one that a lot of folks have heard as kids, and if you're a parent, this might be one that you say to your children.
Use with regularity.
Yeah, which is, money doesn't grow on trees. That's another commonly used money phrase. And obviously, there's no such thing as a money tree, although there is a house plant that's sometimes called the money tree, right? We should have one down here in the office.
Yes, we should.
We should call it the how to money tree. But the saying, you know, with hopefully some additional explanation, can help our kids to know that money comes along hard work. You know, like we kind of talked about this at the top of the episode, you know, with Evie, my daughter. It's like, if she just wanted that out of the blue and she didn't have any money saved up, well, maybe I would have said, hey, money doesn't grow on trees. Like, how do you come about earning that money? Those are the lessons that we need to make sure we're teaching our children.
And she'd be like, Dad, update your lingo. Okay. Nobody says that anymore.
And we want to make sure that we're teaching the lesson that like spending on a whim isn't a great idea, because it also ultimately means that we're going to have to work more. Like it means it's essentially a trading of your time for your money. But I don't want to talk more about that, because we'll actually get to that one a little bit later.
Oh, yes, we will.
A little foreshadowing.
But also too, Matt, in response to that phrase, money doesn't grow on trees, I feel like it has kind of another connotation, right? Like reaching financial independence is the other side of the coin, where what you've been able to invest grows to such a point that you do have an essentially limitless money tree at your disposal, as long as you obviously like keep it within the realms of your budget and maybe the 4% rule or something similar to that.
Sure.
It's not private island kind of money, but who really needs that, right? But your money will be making money for you without you needing to work. So I think like money doesn't grow on trees, and that's obviously true. But that money tree, the financial independence money tree, is something that is attainable with a whole lot of years of intentional financial choices, smart saving and investing. You can almost create your own money tree if you do a really good job with money over a long period of time.
Yeah, and that's why we invest. You know, this is such an important concept, and it's one that we revisit regularly here on the show. But we're gonna keep on going. And the next phrase that we wanted to tackle here is: does it actually take money to make money? That's kind of how the common phrase goes. So let's start by referring to what we just said, right? Money can and will provide compounding returns if it is invested well. Investing in the overall stock market, for example, will ensure that the money you have is making money for you. And in that case, it does take money to make money. And the more you have, the larger the returns are going to be that you get to see.
Yeah, so this phrase has a lot of accuracy to it, right? But there's also a major disconnect here when we hear this phrase. It doesn't always take money to make money. If you weren't a trust fund baby, you can still make real money out there in this world, right?
True.
Yeah, our country might not be idealistic in terms of everyone being able to succeed, but this is still, I think, the land of opportunity. And you don't have to have loads of cash to capitalize on the ability to make money in the United States of America. And for example, if you want to start a business, go back and listen to our episode with Alan Donegan, where he gave a ton of practical examples for starting your business with $0. That was episode 247. I think sometimes we let that phrase almost dominate our psyche. It is helpful to have money to make more money. Like if you lend your money out, you can make money in different ways. If you buy a rental property with your money, you can make money, and it takes money to buy that rental property, right? But at the same time, don't let money stand in the way of some of your goals and ambitions. A lack of money means that you need to have a little more creativity, and that creativity can help you make money too. You don't necessarily need to have a boatload of cash or to have actually been a trust fund baby in order to succeed. And I think sometimes, yeah, this phrase can kind of conjure up a limiting belief for a lot of people. Oh, I don't have the money. I can't do it.
That's
I can't
right.
do what other people are doing. And I'm not saying it's not a little bit harder, but you can get there.
Yeah, you can still get there. It just takes a little bit, maybe more time. It takes a little bit of sweat equity, you know, instead of just actual cash.
Right.
All right, we got two more phrases that we're going to get to. And so this next one is, you hear folks saying that this money is burning a hole in my pocket. Like you hear people say that like on payday, right? After they've gotten their check.
I'm ready to go to the club, except for clubs aren't open.
And so, I mean, anyone who comes across unexpected money is liable to have this feeling, you know, this experience where, you know, they're itching to spend their money. 100% true for natural spenders out there. There's other folks who, you know, may not feel this quite as much. They're natural savers. They see that as an opportunity to save money. But for all the natural, the default spenders out there, this is a serious problem. And it can be a conundrum, you know, to have too much money in your pocket or even in your bank account that isn't there for a specific purpose. You know, you don't want to touch your emergency fund, of course, but it can be easy to rationalize spending maybe some extra money that you have sitting in your account that, you know, is above and, you know, beyond your core savings. Like we've all had an experience where we're having cash in our hands meant that it would soon be in someone else's hands because we couldn't bring ourselves to actually save it. It makes me think even to the stimulus money. Like I wonder how many folks who receive their money like as a, you know, on as a physical check or on one of those debit cards. I guarantee like that those folks were more likely to have spent that money than folks who received the you know, the direct deposit into their accounts where they never really truly saw it. It just kind of, you know, they saw their balance go up.
The number on the screen went higher.
Yeah, but like there's such a detachment from that versus having a physical, you know, check card or debit card in your hand where it feels like I've got money right here. Let's go ahead and stimulate the economy, you know, just like the government wants us to. There's something about having that money in your hand that makes you want to spend it.
Yeah, and the form that you get it in makes a big difference,
yes,
like you just mentioned. I think, too, it's important to find ways to earmark money that we get for future purposes so that it doesn't burn a hole in our pockets, causing us to spend it in frivolous ways. Are you saving for a trip? That's great. Make sure that the money has a name so you don't spend it in the heat of the moment on something else. And then you're like, oh, man, I'm either going to have to like cancel the trip or at least like tone it down. Like we're not going to be able to go as big as we thought we were going to be able to. And that's a bummer because you spent it on stuff in the interim that you didn't mean to prioritize. It just happened that way because money was literally burning a hole in your pocket.
Yeah. Or
not literally, I guess, but that would be
what's
bad.
His name from Parks and Rec? Like, literally, like Rob Lowe's character.
I think Rob Lowe literally has a podcast called Literally now.
Oh, does he really?
I think he does. Yes. So
good.
Good times. Also, if you've got too much cash, Matt and I would say make sure that you're investing some of it. It helps prevent the temptation to spend that money needlessly and helps it grow for your future. I think, Matt, obviously we've talked about cash is important. Having an emergency fund is huge. If you have too much cash hanging out, you might start to think, oh, I guess I can spend this. It's fine. But the more that we get essentially out of our ability to touch, right, by putting it in tax advantage investment accounts, by putting it in other vehicles besides just a savings account, that can be a great move that prevents us from spending it.
Yeah, and that's a great argument for budgeting, right? I mean, when you do zero-sum budgeting, you're literally putting a name to every single cent, every dollar that you have, and that keeps...
Maybe not the pennies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're doing it on the spreadsheet, man, I want it to equal zero, and then that's what I do. So yeah, that's a good tactic for making sure that you don't have large swaths of money that are just kind of disappearing. It's like, what happened to that stimulus money? She's like, oh, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
That is not what you want to be saying. And so, all right, dude, it is time for our final phrase that you may have heard more than maybe even any of the other ones that we've mentioned today, which is time is money. And actually, we wanted to address this one because time is actually more important than money. You know, like money might feel finite depending on your situation, but it's not. You know, like you always typically will have the ability to make more money. But time, on the other hand, like we're never guaranteed more time. And so equating the two, like if in your mind you feel that these two are the same or that they have the same importance, it'll make you think of them, you know, equally, and it'll make you more apt to trade your vastly more important time for money, maybe more than you should.
Yeah, Matt. And of course, we all have to work for a living, right? You can't get by on pure laziness. You know, we try to teach our kids that all the time. You're talking about that earlier on the show with how you're teaching Evie, getting her to make some money, and Selma making some money, you know, watching the cat.
Yeah, money doesn't grow on trees, girls.
No, like. Of course it doesn't. Yeah, we're going to use that probably more often after this episode. But obviously, we have to work for a living, and work shouldn't be demonized. We think work provides a lot of meaning and hopefully a lot of joy and satisfaction. But equating time and money can cause us to live like beings that were only created to work, putting an overemphasis on something that is meant to have like a proper role in your life. But that's just not true, right? We weren't created as work beings. We were created for so much more than that, for like deep connection and relationship, to explore our world or to just be, right? Like that's why they call us human beings, right? I think we can get by just being. So yeah, I think you're right, Matt. I think time is not money. And I think if we think that time is money, then we are more likely just to make that straight up trade-off, you know, whenever the opportunity arises to make an extra buck. And we would say, no, protect your time, take care of it, because it's more important, more valuable than, you know, the green stuff.
That's right. And kind of going back to, you know, the money doesn't grow on trees phrase, right? Like you're talking about, you know, how it kind of does grow on trees, like if you're looking at it through the lens of like financial independence or financial freedom, right? Like
time and compounding.
Yeah, when you have invested your money, like you realize that like not only are these things not equal, but you don't need to exchange your time anymore for money, because when you have invested your money and put those dollars to work for you, well, you're going to be receiving money from those dollars, not from, you know, the exchange of your time. And so that's definitely an important lesson to, I guess, end the episode here on. So it's, you know, it's fun to take some of these like more common, I guess, financial phrases that we hear every day to task, right?
Like, to the woodshed.
Yeah, it's like, let's put these through the gauntlet a little bit here. And so hopefully now when you hear someone mention a money quote or a familiar phrase, you can, you know, do a little bit of critical thinking before assuming that it's 100% true. Some of these popular phrases have stood the test of time for a reason because they are true, but others, you know, they have elements of truth, like they're truthy, but they need maybe a bit more explanation to be understood in a fuller context. And we hope that we've allowed you to think through some of these phrases as you kind of move forward in your life and do smart things with your money as well.
No doubt. All right, Matt, let's get back to the beer that we had on this show. This one was called Aliens on Moonshine. And, you know, you can make your own mental picture of what that looks like in your mind. But, yeah, what were your thoughts on this IPA from Torch Top?
Dude, really solid. I mean, I feel like I can just say it's like a classic New England style IPA. Like, it's not listed as a New England style, but we poured it. It was definitely hazy. It's a double as well. So it, I don't know. It doesn't say it's double dry hop, but it definitely has some of those dry hop flavors going on where it feels like the hops are a little more green, like a little more pungent, you know, but at the same time, it wasn't overly bitter. It wasn't all hops. It had a nice kind of balance to it. It had a little bit of sweetness going on too. But yeah, what were your thoughts?
I thought it was like bold and brash. Like the hops completely overtook anything else going on in this beer.
Yeah, it's definitely an IPA.
and that's also too like a newer style, right? Like where all you can taste is the hops. It used to be that you'd want some sort of a balance in your IPA where you'd want some maltiness and some hoppiness. And these days it's like, oh no. Please leave out the malt altogether and just throw in the hops. And that's exactly what this one had going on. It was like pure hop concentrate almost. And I really like some of the stuff that Torch Hop has going on. And I thought this was actually one of the better IPAs I've had from them. Nice. So I need to check out more of their stuff in the future.
You've been there a couple times. I actually have never been to, it's a brew pub, right?
Yeah.
Like it's not a straight up brewery, but it's a brew pub. They make really good beers. I've never been there myself, so I definitely need to check it out.
Got to go for Wednesday wing night.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Wings and a beer for like $12 or something like that.
Oh, that's a deal.
It is a deal. And the wings are good too.
Nice. I'll add that to our short list. We're always looking for new spots that we're hoping to get back to as things normalize over the coming months. But dude, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, and if you've been enjoying the show, tell a friend. We'd love it if you would pass on the How to Money love to somebody else who could use some helpful advice in how to approach their personal finances. And if you think Matt and I could stand to do a little bit better, we'd always love to hear from you too. Just go to our website, howtomoney.com/dobetter. Drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you because Matt and I are always up to improve the show and make it more helpful. So Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.